2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Final half hour of the KSL Greenhouse Show happening now. And we're here to help you and answer your questions. That's what we're going to do right now. Ton, we had Jerry, who's called in a couple times this morning and had trouble keeping her call up. And so her question was about eggplant. She's trying to grow eggplant, and she's having similar problems to the squashes and the tomatoes this year. Is this a heat thing?
It is. Green beans, squash, cucumbers, pumpkins, tomatoes, it's heat-related, and when we cool down, they should start to produce.
Okay. Let's answer a texter real quick. Hi, I'm in Kaysville. I was wondering when I should plant peas for a fall crop.
You should plant peas about 60 days prior to your average first frost. So what that means that, you know, Wasatch Front or first frost is usually early to mid-October.
I was going to say end of September. Early
yeah,
October.
So you should get them in within the next week.
Okay. So there you go. Let's take a call now. Let's check in with Robert, who's calling in from Stansbury Park. Hi, Robert.
Hi. How are you guys?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Good. Love the show. Did a question. I'd like to get some Polana raspberries. I know Tana's recommended those in the past, but I can't find a local source for them. Do you know, aware of a local source
some
for the Polana raspberry?
Some garden centers will have them in the spring, but if not, you can mail order them from a few different companies. One of them, oh no, now that you've called, I can't
remember them.
Oh, what is the name of it? I'll think of it, but some local garden centers carry them.
Do you know which ones? Because I looked in the spring and I couldn't find them. I'm in Stansbury Park.
You may call J&J in Layton.
Okay.
And then also Western Gardens.
Okay.
In Salt Lake. And then down in Utah County, probably I'd call Cook's and Linden Nursery.
Okay.
And maybe Sun River Gardens.
Okay. And so, then online, if your memory comes back to you.
Give me a minute, and okay. I'm running on about 3 hours of sleep.
Oh, sorry about that.
So, no, it's my fault. Give me a minute, and I'll think of it.
Okay.
I remember Norse Farms.
There you go.
N-O-U-R-S-E, Norse Farms.
Okay. All right.
They carry both Polka and Polana.
Okay, great.
All right, Robert.
All right.
Good
Thank
luck
you very
with
much.
The raspberries.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for calling. Thanks. And another text here, Ton. I have three flowering crabapple trees in my front yard. They've been planted there for about 2 years, and they're still fairly small. They're planted too close together, and I'd like to move them. When is the best time to do that, and how?
After the leaves drop this fall would be fine. So how is you need to dig a trench around the tree 3 or 4 or 5 inches beyond where the initial root balls were and go down a good 2 feet. And see if you can just gently lift that tree out using maybe some burlap or a tarp, getting the tree on top of it, and then just gently, so you're keeping the root ball intact and moving one or whatever you're going to move to a new home.
Okay, let's take a call from Melanie, who's been patiently waiting. Melanie, good morning. You're calling in from Sandy?
Yes, hi there. I'm looking to, my mom passed away recently, and I'm looking to transport we're selling her home, looking to transport a piece of the family grapevine to my house in Sandy. And I've heard that fall is the best time to do it, but that's not an option right now. So I wondered if it could survive if I did it right now.
It's actually not the best time to do it.
Okay.
So what I would actually do is the new growth that came this year, you could collect some cuttings, sometime in January or February.
Okay.
And then you're going to get cuttings that are probably a foot long, and you want to keep track of what end is up. And then you would put those into vermiculite or perlite, which you can pick up from local garden centers, about 6 inches deep. And you probably will want to use some rooting hormone, which you can pick up from local garden centers. And then just keep those so that they stay moist. So the containers will need drainage, but you could start those in a bright sunny window or under grow lights sometime in, you know, February through February, and just let them grow indoors, and hopefully they have enough roots by spring that you can plant them outside.
Okay. So keep them for how long?
You'd harvest them in January, and you could put them in a bag in your refrigerator for a few weeks, but you'd want us to probably start those by mid-February. And you could collect the cuttings in mid-February, too.
Collect in February and then put them in the water.
Yeah, and there's some tutorials on YouTube you could watch. Michael Caron, who's our grape expert or grape specialist, if you wanted to email him for some details, too, that would be fine. You do an internet search of USU and Michael Caron, C-A-R-O-N, it'll bring up his number and his email.
Okay, great. That's a great resource. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Good luck with the grapes, Melanie. All right, let's take one more call before we have to take a break, and that's Pat. You're also in Sandy. Good morning, Pat.
Hi. I'm so frustrated. This isn't about flowers. I have just a normal rambler in the regular yard, and I'm not by any fields. And I had these gophers that came in my backyard, and now they've gone to my front yard, and I'm cement wall to wall. But I must have at least 10 heels in my front yard, and I've been paying $100 a week to have these people come out. And they put this probe down and put the pellets down there. Well, I've learned how to do that. He told me dry ice. I make a hole and put dry ice down there. What do I do? And they're between my roses. And I took a bucket the other day, and I took almost 3 gallons of soil just from their mounds. How is there anybody know anything else I could do?
I'm going to let Dave take this one.
It's time
for they ever come out to breathe? I never see them.
they come out, but they come. They're nocturnal. I mean, they come out when nobody's going to see them. But okay, so it's time for some pyrotechnics. And you can go to one of these farm supply places like IFA, and they will sell these. They're kind of shaped like a big giant firecracker or very tiny, you know, stick of dynamite, and they just smoke, and the smoke is poisonous. So
I've used a whole package of smoke bombs, and that doesn't even faze them.
Okay, so this is what I do, and this is what's worked for me. Now, I don't know if this is going to – they come in different sizes. You need the larger one, obviously, because you're doing the larger critter. So you would put that smoke bomb in there and go ahead and cover up the hole, right? So that none of the smoke can come out the other way. And then you're standing by watching these other mounds. If you see smoke coming out of them, and you quickly cover those mounds. You want to trap that smoke down inside.
Okay. And what's the name of it?
Oh, I don't know. There's a brand name on them.
If you were to hit IFA or maybe Steve Regan or another local farm store, they will have them, and just tell them you need to go for smoke bombs.
Is it a probe or is it just a bomb?
No, it's just...
It has a fuse on it.
Yep. You light it, you set it down inside there, and
cover the hole. Old-fashioned smoke bomb.
Yep.
Because the ones I bought come like 6 to a package, and you just light them, look like a firecracker, but they're kind of long. Is that them?
Yeah, but they make them in different sizes. Make sure you got the larger size.
Get the large?
For the gopher. Right?
Oh, man, they take out a petunia a day, and then they move another spot in the big hills, and I think...
Oh, they're aggravating.
Is there any hope that they'll ever can get rid of them?
Oh, yeah, there's hope. And I don't know, as the people you... The people you've been working with that service, they've been trying to trap them. I know that oftentimes that's successful.
No, they just come out and put pellets down, charge me $100. And so finally I decided I could do that. But he said if you put dry ice down there, when the dry ice stops foaming, it sucks all the oxygen out. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
I've not heard of that either.
It gases them and it may suffocate them, but it doesn't suck the oxygen out.
Okay,
I think the smoke bombs would be something you could try. Now, one thing also is you can go out there and knock the mounds down.
Uh-huh.
And the reason for this is they will quickly rebuild them within a day or so.
Oh,
and you've got
okay.
new mounds, and you know they're active in there, and then you would go in with the smoke bombs.
I see a new mound every day, and but he told me not to put the bomb down the hill, go to the sides, because they throw the dirt from the side of the hill.
Well, you'll need to carefully excavate to find the tunnel to put the bomb into.
Yeah, you have to be in their actual tunnel.
I have a metal probe, and I've pushed it down there, and all of a sudden, it just goes right easy, like 3 inches, and I know I've hit the trap.
Yeah, so get a little hand shovel, like you used to do transplants,
okay.
And just carefully move those mounds away, like sliding the dirt out, and then just kind of dig down there until you get into the tunnel so it doesn't collapse, and then you put the smoke bomb down there, make sure it's going, and then just hurry and cover that over.
Okay. So IFA is real close to me, and I asked them for a large smoke bomb.
Yeah, try that.
For gophers.
And I've also seen traps work quite well for gophers.
Traps, okay. Yeah. I'll try.
Now, on those traps, what you would want to do is put two of them in opposite directions where you get into the tunnel, and you need to hand excavate because you don't know what direction they're going. Or so you can try that, but you want to put two in there facing opposite directions so that if they're coming from either direction, they're going to get hit.
I'm on sandy soil, and they were in the backyard. And how could they get to the front yard when I have cement, my house, and I have cement from wall from side to side? How do they get under
the
house?
They may have come from a neighbor's yard just for
the
front.
Yeah, there's any number of ways they can get around that.
Okay. All right. You gave me some good ideas. Thank you.
Good luck, Pat. Hopefully that works for you, and you can be gopher-free here. I'm having these images of Bill Murray and Caddyshack right now. So, thanks for your call, Pat. All right, let's break now, and we're going to come back on the other side of this break. We're going to answer some more of your questions. We've got just a few minutes left. We can have time for maybe one or two more calls. So if you've got one, now's the time to get in. KSL Talk is the line, and that's the number, and we'll help you on the other side. And this is the KSL Greenhouse Show.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are. And this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Final segment of the KSL Greenhouse Show this morning. It's been a lot of fun to be here with you, Tom. We've still got some questions to answer, though. John is calling in from Layton. Good morning, John.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Very well. How are you?
Great. So I got a question. I have a Japanese okoba that I planted in March. It's about a 2-inch diameter trunk at the bottom, probably 12 feet tall, but about 8 feet above part of the main branch that goes up top has probably a 2-inch long piece where the bark looks like it's come off. It looks really dry, but that section above it still has leaves, but there's some section that they're dead.
Okay.
How
often have you been watering?
Well, I think that was probably the result of neglecting to water it a month or so ago, and now I just noticed that damage. I try to water it twice a week and just kind of put a really, really slow trickle from the hose and let it go about half hour to an hour.
Okay, and have you been seeing the brown leaves increasing in number on the tree?
Well, since I saw the leaves, this probably happened, like I said, about a month ago and whipped me back into shape. So now I'm trying to do all I can to recover.
What I would recommend doing is getting a shovel and digging along the side of the tree to see how wet the soil is. And I suspect you're probably fine, but some areas of Layton have clay soil. And so I would just dig down. And if that soil, let's say you watered today for an hour, then I would go in there Monday or Tuesday and dig. And if that soil is still moist, don't water again. But 2 to maybe 3 times a week like you're doing is probably sufficient. And just let the tree establish and hope for the best. I mean, the tree's not dead, and over a number of, just like if 2 or 3 years, it'll fill back in as long as you keep it watered correctly.
Is there anything I should do to this kind of bare patch on the bark?
No. Now you're saying, is that, are all the leaves dead on that particular branch?
No, nope.
Just leave it alone. You can peel some of the dead bark away carefully, but otherwise just leave it alone.
Okay. I'm just worried because I can kind of see, almost looks like a split linearly.
If it looks like it's going to break, you could prune it out if it wasn't going to destroy a lot of the tree's canopy. But otherwise, just because, like, if you have wood exposed or the bark's peeled back, that's not necessarily bad.
Okay.
John.
Well, I appreciate it.
Thanks for your call. Don, we're running short on time, but let's try and squeeze one more call in. Betty is calling in from Ogden. Good morning, Betty. We've got about just a minute.
Betty? Hello, is that me?
Yeah, it's you.
Okay.
Okay.
We're building a raised garden box, and we have access to some dry dairy molds, all we can use. And if I just put that in the box, would it be too hot? Will it grow my garden?
Do not do that. It'll be way too hot.
Oh.
You want to get a raised bed mix, make it yourself, and there's recipes online or purchase it. But that's not soil. It's manure, and you'll kill your plants if you just fill it up with that.
I almost did that.
Yeah, don't do that.
It's a big box, and that if I have to buy it, that's probably a lot.
Well, maybe there's some other options we may need to discuss next week, but filling it up with manure is probably one of the worst options.
All right, Betty.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a good one. Okay, Ton, in 10 seconds, European firebug, do they eat seeds? Beet and carrot seeds never came up this year, and we have these critters in Orem.
No, they eat dry tree seeds like ash and elm.
Okay, so that's not yours. Your carrots are just hard to grow.
Yes.
All right, thanks for being here today. It's been fun
great.
To hang out with you, and Maria will be back next week, so it's been fun to hang out. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us here on The Greenhouse Show today.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.